You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to the Civic Media Spotlight. We kick off the first segment of the Civic Media Spotlight with Lean Local, with former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt. Jim talks to Sam Dunlop, who's running for the county board.
All right, welcome everyone to Lean Local. Lean Local is the show where we do what we say in our title, is that we lean local into what's going on in the greater Green Bay community. And there is a lot going on. Following the news here can be a little bit challenging in that standard media, TV, radio, and of course the newspaper, they're limited with time and what they can put into certain stories. Here on Lean Local, we lean a little bit deeper than I think some of the other outlets do, and everything from suicide, fentanyl, homelessness, but an umbrella over all of that are the upcoming elections. So April 7th, we are going to elect a city council here in Green Bay. We're going to elect a Brown County board, which is all of Brown County. And you get their literature and you see their yard signs, maybe get a robocall or a phone call. But to really sit down and talk to a candidate is something that I want to bring to you. And as I said to you last week and the week before, we're going to be doing this until April 1st. And then, of course, you're going to go vote on April 7th. Now, early voting starts a couple of weeks earlier, so keep that in mind. But our first guest today is Sam Dunlap. Now, Sam is running for the county board, right?
And
we talk about city council, of course, De Pere City Council. Everybody's got their own, local. And then you've got the county board, which oversees a number of issues that affect all of us. And, of course, got the airport, the jail, library system, that's all with the county. And I think
a lot of people don't know. A lot of people have no idea what the county
is. And so we're going to discern some of that today, but really what we're going to just want to learn as much as we can in the next few minutes about Sam Dunlap. And so Sam, welcome. I just want to say you are running for county board, District 7.
That's correct.
District 7 is in the city of Green Bay. So we have a District 7. Seven older person, and we'll have a District 7 County Board Supervisor, which you or your opponent is going to have that seat. And District 7 is kind of the near west side of Green Bay. So as many of you know, I work at the new community shelter on Mather and Broadway. That would be in that district and that whole area around there. So Sam, welcome. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're in studio.
It's really outstanding to be back in the Green Bay area, to get back involved in local politics. It's actually a real pleasure because I think that there are a wide variety of policy issues that are coming to a head here in the community. And sometimes they intersect with national politics, but most of the time they don't. And I think that we have a paucity of folks who step up and are committed to wrestling with the significant issues, as you know full well, that sometimes are partisan, but most of the time at the local level, they're not. And you just need people who are committed, do the homework, read their information, and then try to do the best they can for the community. So, I'm primarily motivated and interested in getting back involved because I lived for a significant period of time out in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon, and saw some things go down there that really challenged my notion of how governance should work and how people, despite best intentions, sometimes, the impact of those best intentions has a significant impact on policy and quality of life for folks. So I don't want to see some of that same stuff happen in Green Bay or in Burn County, to be perfectly honest. Right.
There's a lot in what you just said. I want to unpack some of that stuff.
Let's do it.
Well, you said you're back. So yeah. You just shared with us that you lived in Portland, Oregon. What made you move? What made you come back? And what were you doing prior to moving?
Yeah.
You're a young guy.
So. Yeah. My interest in politics goes back a long, long time. I went to Preble High School, graduated and went to St. Norbert College. We share that in common, I think. And I was fortunate to get involved in local politics at a pretty young age. I got elected to the city council in De Pere when I was 21, reelected when I was 23, and then opted to run for the state legislature in 2008, 2010. Ran as a Democrat and got close in 2008, but just got my my ass handed to me in 2010. So I kind of tucked my tail between my feathers and decided I needed to re-examine my life and where I thought they...
A point on that. When you pick a team,
yeah,
and you were the same person in 8 and 10,
yep,
but the national politics were different.
Much, I mean...
And that's what swayed... You shouldn't feel as bad as you maybe do, but I mean, that's why I'm gonna, later in the interview, I'm going to get into this partisanship, but... I've said this, people have heard it a million times on the radio when I say there's no Democrat or Republican way to pick up garbage or plow streets. It's local as can be. And I like the nonpartisan angle. We'll get to that later. But all right, so you were in De Pere for...
a long time. And basically from 2001 all the way until in 2011.
So Portland, I've been out there a number of times. I have a nephew who lives out there and knew the mayor. What attracted you to Portland?
Well, a couple of things. I had worked at St. Norbert after I had went there as a student and really enjoyed my experience. I still love De Pere. But sometimes you put in the rearview mirror and take a loss and you examine your life and you think about the things that you haven't done that you want to do. Mm. And you examine opportunities, and I had an opportunity for a job in Boston, and I had grad school as an opportunity in Portland, Oregon. And it was a fully funded grad program, Portland State University. Mm. And, I went out and toured it, and Portland for a long time had gotten a lot of things right. Great urban planning, sustainability, public transit, you name it, cultural arts. I mean,
outdoors.
I mean, a fantastic place to be a young person. And I went out there to visit to kick the tires and fell in love. Oh, yeah. I also, I'm now 43. And at that time I was in my late 20s, and Green Bay was still pretty conservative then, and I hadn't come out of the closet really. So I, decided I needed to go someplace where I would feel more comfortable. And one of the things that stuck out to me, Jim, was that the mayor of Portland at that time was an out gay man. And, I feel like they had figured it out some things, dialed in some things around city policy, and it was a wonderful place to live. But by the time I reached the conclusion of my tenure there, I don't know that that happens very much in life, that a place goes through so much transformation. Between the pandemic and a huge rise in addicted, houseless, mentally ill people on the streets, made kind of what felt like a dream feel like a nightmare for a lot of people who are living in the urban center of the city. So, that kind of partially drove me back to come back to home and to Green Bay, but also, quality of life around affordability, being close to family. When you get to my age, your parents start aging. I had lost my father while I was living in Oregon. You just kind of become more attuned to that when you're away for a while. So that combination of things kind of drove me back. But I started noticing when I would come back and visit, and then when I actually moved back here full time, that some of the same things that I observed happening during my time in Portland were kind of creeping their way into the lived experience of folks here in Green Bay. Some of the negative things, yeah.
I want to hear what you have to say. I just want to say, I think people study success, and I think you should, and there's a lot of successful cities, but I think you should take a little bit of time and study the ones that it didn't work. Yeah. And like if Detroit, and that was a while ago, but if they have a book called The Autopsy, which is a great book and it's a quick read, but what happened? And from businesses and when the donors stop donating, that's a sign of uh-oh. And there's a couple other things. And I'm curious as to what you saw in Portland that you felt could happen here in Brown County.
Well, there was one of the things that happened and that I think really was kind of a precursor is that Portland had always been, I think, a place that was more welcoming and an ecosystem of nonprofits, places that people could get help if they were struggling with houselessness, addiction, mental illness. You had a wide variety of resources for that people. And in some ways, that always becomes a magnet when communities have that. So sometimes more rural places will send those folks to the urban centers where those places, those resources exist.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure that happens here, but it was really ubiquitous in Oregon. And frankly, they kept on driving more public resources, tax resources to the homelessness issues, mental illness issues. And then of course there was a voter referendum initiative. They have a really lowercase L liberal kind of mentality around being able to have citizen-led referenda in Oregon that decriminalized basically small quantities of almost all drugs. And that happened to be implemented the same year as COVID-19 started in 2020. So that drove a huge explosion of people on the streets, fentanyl being used and destabilizing folks. So when I, you know, when I first moved to Portland, occasionally you'd see people who were, you know, strung out on drugs in the public transit or in a park. But by the time I left, I lived in a high rise in the downtown, very close to where I worked at the university. There were people defecating on the sidewalks, tents littered on either side. You could call 911 as I had to at one point, and they would tell you unless it was an extremely violent emergency, you weren't going to get a response. And for frankly, wow, as someone who has historically been a Democrat, that's, in my opinion, the first responsibility and priority of government is safety. And if you're not passing that, you know, kind of primary objective and duty, you're failing. Mm-hmm. And amid the all the other things, it's kind of like I'm paying a premium to live in a place that I no longer feel safe. My partner is 6'2". I'm 6'1" and a half. I say I'm 6'2". But we both carried pepper spray and we're two big adult men, you know? Yeah. And that seems insane. There are places I've been around the world. I travel for work all the time where I don't feel that sense of lack of a safety. And I see that. I saw that creeping up in Green Bay. Maybe you've observed it. I know you live close to downtown. Mm-hmm. But it has spread. I never recall observing that in the same way when I lived here back in 2011 and before that. And it's hard to miss it now, you know? And there are signs of what I saw in Portland, us being at this at an earlier stage of that here. And that, for me, is a very concerning kind of warning signal.
I'm going to get to that about Brown County. But before I do, I want to, one other thing in Portland that made you say, oof, maybe this isn't going the right direction. This isn't long-term. This is going to get worse. Is there one other thing you talked about, the homelessness and the relaxing of drug penalties, which in your view made more people use?
Yeah, of course, 100%. I mean, the moment you take away the penalty or the potential enforcement for that, I think people lose this sense that if they're struggling with something, let's be honest, you obviously do a lot of work with unhoused folks. Mm-hmm. A lot of people turn to addiction because they're trying to self-medicate, mm-hmm. right? They're struggling with some sort of trauma. And the moment that you give them no reason to fear any kind of recourse for that, I think is misguided.
We have 116 people living at the new community shelter. 70% of them are in some type of program.
Yeah.
And it's totally up to them. There's no pill, there's no shot. They have to do it. And you're right. And they have to be held accountable. And we breathalyze people all the time. If you start relaxing those rules, you made a good point. It's self-medicating. They are so frustrated with everything.
Life circumstances.
Everything. So anyway, I want to move on to another issue. Was it infrastructure, transit, education, anything else that made you think like, ooh, I got to get out of here?
Well, I mean, it became a black hole for all sorts of resources. So if you wanted to use the urban light rail or you wanted to use the streetcar, it had become so primarily used by these folks who were idled on drugs that you didn't feel comfortable using it. All the amenities that were being funded by taxpayers and citizens locally had been overrun by folks who were in crisis. And there was a seemingly bottomless pit of tolerance for that. And I don't think that that's a mentality that many folks here in the Midwest would have, but the lack of critical thinking around it, and let's be honest, in a place like Oregon, you basically got solo party control over most layers of government, mm-hmm. state, local, county, and seemingly inability to wrap their head and their hands around these complex issues. Now, granted, homelessness is a civilization's old problem, but the intersection of homelessness and addiction is not. I mean, especially with these insidious drugs like fentanyl.
Right. So we know why what Portland was doing right. We're going to find out how you can take that plus your experience to make Brown County that not happen, actually turn Brown County to where it is a thriving place. We're going to be right back. We are talking with Sam Dunlap, who is a candidate for County Board District 7. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We move our focus to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach. Pete and Greg talk to the executive director of Milwaukee Film, Susan Kearns.
Welcome back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach, coming to you live tonight from various parts of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. We are talking about a lot of the things in life that make us happy tonight. A little anti-tech talk in hour one. We're going to switch our attentions now. And I loved our responses for the question tonight. Maybe we can ask our guest, our next guest, what she would do if she could ask God a question. But let's bring her on and not waste any more time. I love having this next person on Nightlight. She is the executive director of Milwaukee Film, and she joins us here periodically to keep us posted on all things movie-related happening in Brewtown, Susan Kearns. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. I don't want to put you on the spot. You can think about this if you want, but if our question of the night is, if you could ask God a question, what would it be?
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin with that question, actually.
Maybe what's your favorite movie? I don't know. We can come back to you on that. That's okay. But it's great to have you here. So let's start right away with the big news coming out of Milwaukee Film yesterday. You used this theater before, and in the Oriental, you guys have great programs there. But tell us about the Downer Theater.
Yeah, so we just bought the Downer Theater. We closed on it last Friday. Wow. We have been operating it through a rental agreement for about the past 2 years. And we had an option to purchase that expired this month. And so we basically made the moves that we needed to do so that we were able to purchase it. So
congratulations.
Am I correct that, like, I think probably about a couple of years ago, it just one night it closed. It just, they said they were done and everyone sort of lost their minds. Because for me, I used to live on the East Side. I love the Downer Theater. I've seen so many beautiful movies there. And there's such a feel about it that, you know, doesn't, you know, you feel like you're in a big city because you're in a tiny movie theater seeing a very small film. And I love that Milwaukee has that option. But if I'm not mistaken, it had closed one night, and then you all came in and decided to essentially do what you said. You took it over and you were renting it. But I guess, like, it's been 2 years now since that happened.
So that happened, I believe, in 2023. So okay. It was closed for roughly a year, and I have those dates wrong, but for roughly a year until mm-hmm. Milwaukee Film was able to take it over in 2024. And you're absolutely right. It was, you know, the Landmark had been operating in it, and it's just, you know, they decided not to continue operating it. So, yeah.
Why don't we talk about, this is Women's History Month. Mm-hmm. So you guys are always so active in whatever. I know you had a lot of events for Black History Month. What's on tap this month?
Yeah. So for Women's History Month, I mean, one of the great things about this month in particular is that we have a lot of programming by women directors already. So so a couple of the big things like Wuthering Heights, which it has definitely been what I would say a polarizing film. yeah. A lot of chatter out there about whether people like it or not. But I would expect nothing less from the director of Saltburn. Right. And then we've got The Bride coming out, and that starts this Friday. What I think is cool about both of those, having those on our screens in March, is they're both directed by women, and they're both kind of different interpretations of classics. And so I think it's a really fun thing that we can offer to audiences. So we can celebrate women's voices, but doing it in a way that is also, you know, just interesting to think about what do these classic stories still have to tell us or to talk to us. And how can we use those? We've also got a super cool Michelle Yeoh series coming up with
Everything cool. Everywhere
All at Once and Heroic Trio 1 and 2, which are just, if you haven't seen those, a lot of fun. Some people are calling them sort of proto K-pop Demon Hunter.
Wow.
and then Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which everybody loves too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If people aren't familiar with those of her films, they're amazing.
It's so great because I have not seen Wuthering Heights yet or The Bride. I think The Bride opens this weekend, actually. So yeah. I'm not, but I did like The Frankenstein. That was kind of a different interpretation. The new one with Jacob Elordi as the sexier Frankenstein. I'm very anxious. Yeah. I loved Promising Young Woman. So, yeah. I'm just a fan of all of her movies. So I'm excited to see that when you guys, I know the announcement about the Milwaukee Film Festival isn't coming out till next week, but will you use other venues besides the Oriental and the Downer for the film festival?
For this year, we're going to stick with the Oriental and the Downer. It just allows us to really capture the energy of the festival and kind of contain it in that one part of town. It worked so great last year that we're sticking with that this year.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's going to be awesome.
All right. Well, we've got, we're going to break for the news in just a moment here, and we're going to come back and talk about some of the really cool stuff that Milwaukee Film is doing for the Oscars on Oscar night, and they're playing shorts and all kinds of stuff. And they're going to celebrate Milwaukee Day in a way only Milwaukee Film really, I think, can do, and they have the perfect movie for it. So we'll tell you about that. Susan, have you had any more time to think about your God question?
Oh, my goodness. No, I've already forgotten.
Okay, think about it during the news. We've got some time. We could get to some other people.
Okay. While you're doing that, I will simply, my mom is texting in right now asking about something. It is your phone, Mom. It's your phone that's maybe having on the hiccup. She's having some tech problems right now. I'm going to tell her, Mom, it's your phone. So you're good to go. Just reload the app. My mom's adorable, everybody.
That is great. I cannot wait to meet Mrs. Bach.
Okay, don't ever say it like that again.
I'm not going to ask her to slow dance or anything, Greg. I'm just a fan of you, so I think I'll like your mom too. That's all.
She's lovely. I'll bring her on the show one day, begrudgingly. She'll be very upset about it.
We'll do that. City Politics on the Stream says, could you heat a burrito so hot that even you couldn't eat it? That's his question for God.
I mean,
okay. Sydney always thinks outside the box. He says, Happy New Year, everyone. That's an inside joke. Then he says, hi to Dave on the stream. And Dave says, great song, Dom. And he says, sup, Sid. And then he says, Sid, we need to meet up. They have a bromance. It's a very beautiful thing here at Nightlight. All our listeners love each other. We are coming back after the news with more about Milwaukee Film and how they're celebrating the Oscars. It's going to be a blast. Susan Kearns is here, folks. Peach Wama and Greg Bach on Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
Welcome back to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach here on the Civic Media Network. My name is Greg Bach. Across the desk from me, I'm just not even going to say in a manner of speaking, he's across the desk from me, is Pete Schwabba. And we are here on the Civic Media Network. You are listening to us or watching us on the live stream. We are Facebook, YouTube, and the platform we still call Twitter. And we are also on the radio or on the Civic Media app. So happy you are joining us this evening. Don't go anywhere before we get out of here. We are going to give you a handy tip for the night. But let us continue our conversation with the executive director of Milwaukee Film. Ms. Susan Kearns is here tonight. And we're talking about the purchase of the Downer Theater, which made me so very happy. But what else coming up? I know that the film festival is coming up in about a month and a half, but what else is coming up through Milwaukee Film that we should know about, or just preparing ourselves for the festival?
Yeah. So, as you said, the Milwaukee Film Festival is April 16th through 30th. So we've got, we're about 6 weeks out from there. Right now we're really in the thick of Oscars season. So one of the things we do, because we know we have Academy Awards completists in our audience. So we're showing all of the shorts programs, the animation, the documentary, and the live action shorts. Those have been incredibly popular with folks, and we have ballots at the theater so that people can, mark off which one that they think will win the awards. We are also this year, we decided that we have a party the night of the big award show. So we will have the awards on one of our theater screens. Basically what we realize is that most of our audiences are at home watching that night. Mm-hmm. So why not invite everybody in? So the theater will become everyone's living room, which I think will be a lot of fun.
It's such a great event, because every year, I mean, I think everybody's like, where do I see the shorts or the fun animated? And you guys just crush it with these events. And it's a great way. And what we were talking about before, when I was in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, that's the one I just missed, is the shorts. And I would have loved, because where else do you see those, all together like that? But and what better place to have an Oscar party than at the ornate, awesome Oriental Theater? So when you do this, is there like champagne or is it just a cash bar? What is the event like other than watching the awards?
Yeah, so we'll just have the regular concessions open. We have considered champagne actually, but you know, we have beer and wine and cocktails and things like that already, THC drinks if that's your interest. And so we'll do some special fun, you know, fun drinks for the occasion as well. Have a couple of special snacks. We are also going to be having some drawings for, you know, a little bit of swag and that kind of thing. So we'll just, you know, we'll make it fun in between the, like when the commercials on are on and just keep it interesting for folks.
With regard, With regard to the festival, I mean, you know, all festivals, I feel like start from very small beginnings. You know, you're like, let's show some movies on a day. Can you talk to us really quick about like the evolution of the film festival from the beginning days to now? You've got you have two theaters. You have a recognizable name, not just here in Milwaukee as an event, but also all over the country and all over the world. That growth over the years to what you've become now, to and how you get that out to the world to say like, yes, Milwaukee has a vibrant film scene and a vibrant film festival. Like, can you speak about that?
Yeah. So the film festival this year, it's 18 years old. So we're becoming adults this year. but honestly, like the Milwaukee Film Festival, when it came on the scene, it came out big. Yeah. And it was originally 10 days and now it's just over 2 weeks. It's, you know, so I think it's 15 days. But we've really always had multiple screens and had presence in at least a couple of theaters. And they've been in different theaters around the city and even as far up as Cedarburg at one point over the years, sort of here and there, depending on what, you know, how the festival was ebbing and flowing. So just a couple of years before the pandemic was when we started operating the Oriental Theater year round. And so that was really a moment of change for the organization, because instead of everybody sort of putting all of our resources and efforts and concentrating those into, you know, just a couple of weeks during the year, suddenly it's like our artistic director, Kara Ogburn, likes to say, we show movies every day. And so we do sort of have almost like a year-round film festival, but we still have this concentrated and very, very busy and robust event as well in April. We work really hard to make sure that we maintain that national and international presence and clout as well. So we're very lucky. We're known for having exceptional hospitality. So filmmakers who come to Milwaukee, they love Milwaukee audiences. They love the questions that our audiences ask. They love the popcorn. They love the theaters. They just have a really good time. So I think that is really helpful in terms of getting people to come back and getting filmmakers to tell their filmmaker friends. So it's been great over the years, the way that we've been able to build this reputation.
Our guest is Susan Kearns. She is the executive director of Milwaukee Film, an outstanding organization that celebrates culture and Milwaukee and movies. And they just do great work. Check out their website. Susan, talk to us a little bit about how you're celebrating Milwaukee Day on April 14th. How fun will this be?
Yeah. So what we decided to do for Milwaukee Day was to show the documentary Song Sung Blue. So the Song Sung Blue documentary was actually one of the very first Milwaukee film events back in 2008 when it came out. And that was before they had a theater. So we were able to put on just a one film event at the Oriental Theater to kind of celebrate the birth of Milwaukee film. So the fact that that film came out and it's been doing so great, we thought what better opportunity than to show the documentary again.
And that leads me to my question too, is like, you know, I've been lucky enough to have tickets to the virtual version of Sundance and all those, and I'm not disparaging those, but they can come off very stuffy. There's, you know, you see video of people in like, you know, $10,000 suits going to these film premieres, and that's great. But what is it about, what is it that you do for the Milwaukee Film Festival that you feel like sets it apart from other ones, that gives it a, besides the hospitality factor and just the fact that people who come here love the city and love this state, but what do you feel like sets Milwaukee apart from other film festivals as far as uniqueness?
Yeah, so one of the things that we keep hearing from people is, and it's hard to quantify, but people keep telling us it's the vibe. So Milwaukee has such a, we're pretty chill people. But we also we're I think more attentive, and this is going to sound awful, but I think we're smarter than people maybe expect or something. So people are, our filmmakers come in and they have these great conversations with fans, or they'll meet a fan who will be like, I love you, and here are three reasons why, and now I'm going to leave you alone, but you know, thank you for being you. And then they'll leave, and the person's just like, that was kind of amazing. Yeah. So we can cultivate that in the space where people get to know each other, and it feels both just like a celebration of the joy of community cinema without getting weird, without the weirdness of like the posturing around $10,000 suits and, you know, paparazzi or anything like that.
I think you're absolutely right. I think when people hear Milwaukee or Wisconsin or the Midwest, they have an automatic assumption of intelligence, artistic intelligence, those types of things. And I've known from many people who come to Milwaukee who will tell me, you know, on day two of being here, I had no idea this place was so amazing. The people are so nice. They're so fun. And I think speaking to what you just said, I think that's very much a Midwestern nice thing of, you're very great. I love your work. I won't bother you anymore. And they move on. They're not trying to get to know you, be your best friend. They just want to tell you you're great, and they're going to move on with their life. But I think that's a very underestimated attribute for Milwaukee overall.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll say is that Milwaukee impresses people in so many ways. So when we have folks come in, they talk about how great the food is. They talk about how beautiful the lakefront is. And, you know, they'll talk about how beautiful the theaters are. But even they'll give us, you know, they'll be like, I can't believe you're showing this movie. That's amazing. Yeah. So it's really just, we kind of, I'm going to say accidentally, even though we all put a lot of thought into what we do, but there is a way in which the city kind of accidentally hits all the marks for people. And it's a catch 22 because we want more people to come to Milwaukee and see how great we are. But there's also kind of something great about being this really amazing secret.
It's funny. I have not seen the documentary, Song Song Blue. I saw the movie and I liked it. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but it probably only bothers people that live in Milwaukee, and I don't live in Milwaukee, but that they shot it in New Jersey. No one else will care. Yeah. But for us, it's like, come on. And I will say, I loved Kate Hudson. I am.
Yeah.
I hope she wins the Oscar. Hugh Jackman looked like Hugh Jackman with a wig, and he's always great. But I loved Kate Hudson. We had Hudson Hensley on the show a couple weeks ago who played the kid. And that scene at the end where he's looking at Hugh Jackman on the video, it was my favorite scene in the whole movie. It was a very sweet film.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed Song Song Blue as well. We definitely did hear that, you know, I mean, not that people were mad at us or mad at the film, but it is like a disappointment that they weren't able to film in Milwaukee. And that, I guess I'll, you know, cue up the Wisconsin tax incentives.
Yeah.
Because that, a lot of people talked about that, you know, we're so lucky that we have the Wisconsin Film and Television Production Tax Incentives kicking in this year, so that for the next Song Song Blue, they can shoot it in Milwaukee. But you're absolutely right. Like at the end, you know, the custard shop, we're all, you know, we all see that. We're like, we know that's supposed to be Leon's, and it's not.
Yeah. Well, and that's not like, there is that movie Love Hurts with Ki-Hui Kwan in it, and it takes place in Milwaukee. And I'm like, this is an industrial hellscape. This is not Milwaukee at all. And also, like, just what, like, I just think it's funny. They pick Milwaukee and they're like, it's overrun by gangs and drug lords. I'm like, okay, you didn't research Milwaukee really well, did you? It doesn't look like, but I'm hoping, but I think you're right though, Susan. I'm hoping that I hope all sorts of artists take advantage of these tax credits, from the independent filmmaker to the major studios, and Wisconsin, whether it's our legislators, whomever, sees the benefit of having these. Because, I mean, all you have to do is look at Atlanta, and that's the end of that conversation right there of whether or not this does good for the community. And I hope that in 2026, they take advantage of it. Are you working as Milwaukee Film, like, and educating people on that right now, or is that something that's going through the state?
Yeah, so that's all going through the state. I am part of the steering committee for Action Wisconsin, and so we were an advocacy group that was really trying to help, you know, just raise awareness about what tax incentives are and how the community could kind of mobilize to help get word out that these are useful to makers in Wisconsin. But now at this point, since Veronica Pope has been hired, she's really in charge of that at the state level.
Excellent.
Yeah. That's great stuff. I thank you for your work on behalf of the incentives, because I do think it is going to matter. I think a lot of what I love about Wisconsinites is that they're hell bent on shooting their film here anyway. So this is kind of doing them a favor, but yeah, for their loyalty, but it'll also help bring more people into. So you'll have to come back and tell us when we get a little closer to the announcement of the lineup, or after it's out, what we can see at the film festival this year. This is always fun, Susan. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and shout out to Greg's mom.
Yeah, you heard it right here, Jackie. Everyone loves you.
She's just part of the team. It's awesome. Yeah. All right, we are coming right back to wrap things up and get Greg's handy tip of the day. It's Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach and Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We go back on the Civic Media Spotlight with Lean Local, with former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt. Jim continues his conversation with Sam Dunlap, who's running for the county board.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Lean Local. In-house guest Sam Dunlap, who is running for County Board District 7. Sam had been on the city council in De Pere for a few years, worked in the college industry, was out in Portland, saw some things happening in Portland that he didn't like, and then moved back here to Greater Green Bay. Actually lives in Green Bay on Ashland Avenue on the west side. And he went through some of the concerns he had. Sam, I want you to just take that, and I want you to talk about what you see as two or three of the big issues facing Brown County over the next few years.
Well, some of it's really basic. You know, back in 2004, when I was on the city council in De Pere, all of our meetings were on local access cable. They were televised. They were, you know, transparent governance. People could tune in. They were recorded. They were replayed. And what I find astonishing about the Brown County Board in 2026 is that their meetings are not recorded and they are not made available to the citizenry. For me, as someone who has historically been more of a moderate than a kind of radical, but that's a common, very essential element to good governance is transparency. And if people can't see what you're doing or the issues you're tackling, and they have to be there in person when you can do almost anything else online these days, that's a fundamental, for me, a priority to making sure that people have faith in government. We have, you know, as I'm sure you have heard and seen, a lot of people who have lost faith in the capacity of government, whether that's a federal government or the state government. But even at those levels, you know, you can see what's happening if you're dedicated to tuning in. You can't do that right now at the Brown County Board. That, for me, is one of the most urgent priorities. And excuse me, they're trying to tackle it, but it's taking way longer than it should.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if this has come up for you in your program before, but
yes, it has. It has.
And it seems ludicrous, doesn't it? I don't understand how, you know.
I'm just the neutral interviewer here, but I just think what you said is that's almost like saying the pledge. It happens everywhere. Yeah. The transparency. And there's been, you talk about study communities where bad things happened. Yeah. Is City of Industry. You know, I lived out in LA for 9 years, and they would have meetings. They weren't transparent, and some of these guys were making millions of dollars, and they were just fleecing this little city, and it just. So that transparency is important. Not everybody reads it. I'll give them that. But, you know, it costs a little bit of money to put this stuff out online. But it's worth it. It's worth every penny of it.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. I mean, I don't know if the motive, I don't know. I can't pretend to understand the motivations behind that. But, you know. Okay.
So that's one thing.
That's one
faith
thing.
We'll call it faith in government. Sure. I don't like that. All right. And
I think number two, you know, and this has come up and it's kind of tied to some of the issues I've seen in Oregon, is that there's a tremendous, like a 2,800 case backlog of misdemeanors and felonies that can't be adjudicated because the circuit's court system simply does not have capacity at present. And that has meant that the county has needed to expend tens of millions of dollars to create extra space while these folks are waiting to be assigned, in some cases, a public defender. I think the county executive said recently it's like $30 million they've spent on these pods to expand the Brown County Jail. And in the meantime, the Constitution guarantees effective speedy trial. And guess what happens when Supreme Courts find out that people are waiting a year, 2 years right. to have their court adjudicated? Guess what happens?
I know what happens.
You know what happens? And this just happened in Portland. 623 cases in Multnomah County, which is where I used to live, were just dismissed. Violent felonies, misdemeanors. Anyway, I don't want that to happen here.
And nor do I. Nor does anyone, really. I had fair and speedy trial. That's not happening. We need more public defenders. State doesn't want to fund them. County needs them. What's the answer?
Well, honestly, it sounds like the county has been working pretty well on this, advocating with the local legislators to, there's a bill right now that passed the assembly. It's got to have its day, I think, next month in the Senate to allocate additional attorneys, but also one more judge. So the capacity to move through this backlog is adjudicated. But even then, it will take years. And the issue is really like if the Supreme Court decides to weigh in on this and they say, okay, if you've been waiting more than, you know, right. 25 months, suddenly all these folks, I don't know if you watched any of these Green Bay Crime Report social media pages, but it is astonishing to see the volume.
All right, 2,800 is, would you support the county just paying for it? I'm not going to wait for the state anymore. These clowns have been talking to them for 11 years.
I mean, the county's already subsidizing it by creating more jail space. So I think you know what I'm saying?
I do. So tell me, what would you do,
That's the only
Sam?
Thing you can, that's the, right now, that
the
is the only
thing you can do is
answer.
Build more pods?
Yeah. The only thing you can, if okay. that's truly, because the county supports all of the funds that support the circuit court system. Right. So the alternative is to not incarcerate these folks, you know, have our law enforcement, you know, basically arrest them and then just to let them go, which does happen in some more progressive municipalities, or to create the space. And for me, it goes back to what I said to you earlier, the primary duty of government is protecting people's safety.
Right. All right. Third thing that you're thinking we have to watch for in the county?
I mean, honestly, it's this slow march of partisanship into the local space. One of the things that I say is, I think, totally anathema to both my personal instincts, but I also think to good governance, is just this, the political theater. You know, I think making sure that people aren't using local government, the city level or the county level, to advance kind of meaningless but divisive issues puts people in camps. Maybe you saw this during your time as mayor, but it seems to me
not as much as it is now.
It seems to me this is becoming more and more of a issue locally. And I think that if people see focused, dedicated folks who aren't so motivated to orient their policy initiatives to political stuff or meaningless identity stuff, then they will have more faith in government too.
All right. So this is a nonpartisan office. You know that. City, yeah, county. Right. And are you or are you not identifying with a political party? You've mentioned it.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who looks into my background will see that I've run as a Democrat historically. I'm definitely more I shouldn't say left of center, but slightly left of center. And that's changed. I mean, all I needed to see living in Oregon was that basically you have one party control. And that's not good anywhere.
So are you running as a nonpartisan or are you running as a Democrat?
I'm running as a nonpartisan. Okay, as a nonpartisan.
I like hearing it. Yeah, it's a nonpartisan 100%. Office. I'd like, there's some people.
I mean, there are some of the local city council candidates are running together, you know, under a party banner.
All right, Sam, I can't believe we're out of time, but we are out of time. Okay. Look, how can people contact you?
They can go to my website, samdunlop.com. My email address, sam@samdunlop.com. Easy way to get a hold of me there. Or you can give me a phone call, 920-217-2813. Really curious to hear about what other people's perceptions of issues are, but awesome. We're at the beginning. So,
all right. Well, good luck. And yeah, thanks for coming in.
Been great to be here. All right. Great to see you again after all these years.
All right. Take care. All right. We'll be right back with another guest who is running for county board on the other side of town. We'll be right back. This is Lean Local with Jim.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.